and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this pre-recorded program. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, June 1st, 2020. A South Sudanese minister says the coronavirus is to blame for the slow implementation of the revitalized peace agreement.
South Sudan has also been locked down by the COVID-19 like all the countries all over the world. That is the common problem. It's not the problem of South Sudan. We could have made a lot of progress, but we have also made progress in some other areas.
And President Salva Kiir's special envoy breaks his silence over accusations of arms supply.
But I've been just keeping quiet, knowing that they will know the truth at the end of the day. May 17, there was accusation that I hired a helicopter and I'm taking guns. They even mentioned the time that at 5:20 p.m. South Sudan local time, I will land in Gumruk.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Minister for Peace in South Sudan's nearly four-month-old transitional government of national unity says the government has made some progress in bringing lasting peace to the country despite some challenges. Stephen Parkwall, a member of Riek Machar's former rebel SPLM-IO, says some of the obstacles to peace includes the corona pandemic, which he says has shut down the country and halted some peace consultation projects. Par says the peace partners remain deadlocked over power sharing at the state level. My colleague James Batty spoke to Par over the weekend from Virginia.
Well, one is the COVID-19 itself. Our institutions are not operating like before. Another thing is the deadlock on the power sharing at the state level. Now, the deadlock is referred to IGAD, but IGAD is also on lockdown.
So you say a deadlock on the power sharing. What exactly do you mean by deadlock?
You remember we were supposed to establish a state government. There's a deadlock between the parties on which state would go to which party.
Here are a few facts that I want to talk about. First of all, just last week, hundreds of villagers were reportedly killed in clashes between cattle herding communities. Now, millions of South Sudanese are still displaced. What would a genuine peace look like to your government?
What is happening now in the countryside is generally the anarchy, which is also aggravated by political vacuum at the state level. But there is no SPLM leaders fueling the intercommunal violence. It is something that has been going on for years now.
How would you react to what some South Sudanese are saying? People like you, and I mean the SPLM-IO, made so much noise against President Kiir. Now you are part of the government. What have you delivered on your promise of reforms in the country?
Well, you know, we did not get a chance really to do most of the things that we have done. Like, the whole world is now on lockdown. South Sudan has also been locked down by the COVID-19 like all the countries all over the world. That is the common problem. It's not the problem of South Sudan. We could have made a lot of progress, but we have also made progress in some other areas.
In what areas?
Well, we have formed the Artigo now. We have also completed the training of the first badges of the BIP Protection Force. We have put our forces in the cantonments, and the training is still going on even in the middle of the COVID-19.
I think you have referred to the coronavirus twice now. I think if I remember clearly, the SPLM-IO went back to Juba before coronavirus. So is it fair to refer to coronavirus as slowing down the process?
I'm telling you that, yes, we have been in Juba now, going to 2 years. We run into so many obstacles, but we have made progress so far. When I refer to COVID-19, I mean more progress could have been made if the lockdown did not come.
What do you say to some South Sudanese who say that the SPLM-IO is more interested in government jobs or positions rather than reforms? And recently also that some of your senior people defected to President Kiir. What's your reaction?
Let me tell you that the SPLM-IO is not in Juba for opposition. We are there to implement the peace agreement. As for these allegations that the SPLM-IO is losing more people to the government, yes, we have defection, but we have also received people from the IG. Many people have come to us. We have been joined by so many. Nobody talked about that. And that is not only the SPLM-IO problem. People have defected from SAWA to the government. All those parties have suffered from this cross-defection.
What is the standing of the VP Protection Force that is part of the security arrangement in the peace deal? Where are we now?
Yeah, we are preparing now to graduate the first badges. They have completed the training, which I think is an achievement. We will also bring the rest of the forces from the cantonment again to the training for the second phase of the training. And these forces now will be unified and deployed according to the agreement.
That's Stephen Parkour, South Sudan's Minister for Peace. He spoke with my colleague James Batty over the weekend. President Salva Kiir's special envoy to the Greater Pibor Administrative Area says he will continue to work with vulnerable communities in the Greater Pibor area despite negative criticism from some South Sudanese. Akot Lual Arech says the accusations leveled against him by some South Sudanese that he is supplying arms to communities in the area is false. He says he has been working with leaders from the area to diffuse tensions and address grievances from community leaders who say the government of South Sudan has ignored the area.
I've been accused for a long time, but I've been just keeping quiet knowing that they will know the truth at the end of the day. May 17, there was accusation that I hired a helicopter and I'm taking guns. They even mentioned the time that at 5:20 p.m., South Sudan local time, I will land in Gumruk with the ammunition and gun to give it to Murule. That day I was in funeral rites of my chief who passed away here in Juba. What I did, I give time to see if the community leaders of this group can come up and dispute this or they will prove it. Nobody came up to deny. So I felt that if I didn't respond to this, people believe that this allegation is true.
And why are people attacking you?
People are attacking me with the assumption that I'm taking guns and ammunition to Murule. And I don't understand what power do I have, even if I have a power. You know, in the army, the chief general or the chief of defense is Jock Riak. He's from Bor. Can he allow me to take the guns to Murule to go and kill Bor in case if I have that intentions? In national security, there are leaders there from Bor who will be able to know who is doing what. Why do other people don't analyze and get the facts?
The letter that you wrote, you mentioned that you want to protect small tribes. There are so many small tribes who are in danger all over South Sudan. What is so special about your work in the Greater Pibor area? What is so special about Greater Pibor area?
You know, the case of Greater Pibor is different from others. The war in Greater Pibor broke out before 2013 and 2016. And that one, when 2013 started, I say, let me see what I can do to cool down the war in Murule area. I don't want Yau Yau to be a part of all this mess. And my appeal to Yau Yau was that you are my age mate and we should not involve in this mess. I told him, look, the generation who brought this country are the elder generation. Our generation is to unite the country. So Yau Yau, listen to me. And you know, as you said, there are many tribes in South Sudan. I'm only one person. I cannot go to everywhere in South Sudan to solve their problems.
Some communities in Jonglei State are not happy with your work. They have accused you of arming smaller tribes, like you said earlier. What is your reaction to this accusation? Let me be very frank. The lone were pointing fingers at you.
That one is not true, because when I say I'm protecting a small tribe, when I went to Yau Yau and asked him to lay down the guns, and I tell him, let us talk, what do you want? They say we need to have our own state. Did I give them a gun to go and liberate Greater Pibor? I didn't. We use a political to get them their right. If there is somebody who says that I give the gun to those people, you bring the proof on the table and let people see it. You know, accusation without proof will not take us anywhere.
In your response to the accusations, You mentioned that you had risked your life in 2013 and 2016 to protect certain individuals from being killed because of their ethnic identity. I'm talking about when the fighting erupted in the capital in Juba. Can you explain what that was all about?
You know, when the war broke out, nobody was controlling anybody. It was even some Binka also were killed. But what I know, I was directed by Taban. Yeah. Taban Dinga was calling me every 10 minutes. So he was directing me to go and help people or to go and bring people wherever they are and then tell me take them to that area. It was Taban actually calling me every now and then.
And so Taban was calling you to go and pick certain individuals.
Collect people.
Collect people and put them in the hotel. And these people you were collecting happened to be from one ethnic group, right?
Let's say most of them are from Ayo. That's what I can say. Because Ayo was divided into two. There is Ayo that left with Mashar and the Ayo that was left here. So I was helping those people. I know they are Ayo, but they are South Sudanese and they are here with us. So they need to be protected.
Talk to us about your plans for the communities of Piboro. It appears like you are not letting up your work in Greater Piboro area despite the attacks from, if you like, intellectuals among the Murule who have said you should be appointed the governor of Greater Piboro area.
My future plan, I don't want to be a governor of Jungle or of Piboro, or I even don't want to be a governor of Warai. I want to help on my small capacity. If there is anything I can do to help my country, I will do whether I have a position or without position. My plan to a small tribe, especially Gie and Kashifo, and this is what I always say in my statement wherever I talk. I say these people are vulnerable. Now, if you go to Kashifo or Gie, you will feel these people are not part of us. They water the drinks. And even they don't have a clothes. Who will be blamed for this?
That's Akot Lual Arech, the Presidential Special Envoy for Greater Piboro Administrative Area. He spoke with me via WhatsApp from Juba on Sunday. The South Sudan government says the UN Security Council resolution to renew arms embargo on the country is, quote, deplorable and regrettable. The Deputy Minister for Foreign Affairs says the decision does not support the government in implementing the revitalized peace deal. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
So the renewal of the sanction regime, particularly on the issue of armed embargo and the targeted sanction against individuals to us, is deplorable and we regret it.
South Sudan Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Deng Dao Deng says if the UN Security Council hopes to stop war in South Sudan, renewing an arms embargo on the country is not the way to do it. Deng says the only peaceful means moving forward is to use dialogue, which he says can restore peace and stability in South Sudan.
This renewed sanction to us is regrettable because we felt that we are doing much that we can do.
Deng says Juba expects the Security Council and countries like the US and the UK to support the country in implementing the 2018 peace agreement, especially with the security sector reforms and the economy. He says the sanctions and arms embargo hamper the government's efforts to restore peace and stability in the country.
We have a police force that need to be trained and that need to be given proper training so that they can overcome. Communities they have guns. So if you are to disarm the community, you need to even put the police in a better position in terms of mobility, in terms of weapon that they can use.
The U.S. drafted resolution welcomes encouraging developments in South Sudan's peace process, including the beginning of the formation of a transitional government. But the resolution also expresses deep concern at continued fighting in South Sudan and condemns violations of the peace deal and cessation of hostilities agreement. The resolution adopted Friday renews the arms embargo, a travel ban, and financial restrictions on certain individuals for a year. Russia, China, and South Africa abstained from the vote. The Security Council additionally scheduled a midterm review in December and expressed its readiness to consider adjusting measures that include modifying, suspending, or lifting the measures. Suba Samuel, spokesperson for the rebel group National Salvation Front, or NAS, says the NAS welcomes the UN Security Council resolution.
South Sudan needs dialogue. South Sudan needs health services and education, reconstruction of the roads. This is what South Sudan needs at the moment, but not spending money to buy equipment of destruction.
Samuel says the UN Security Council also needs to look into countries that may be arming the South Sudan government. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, how are health workers fighting COVID-19 in Western Equatoria State? That story is coming up.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you share an inspirational quote and where you heard it from?
Heavy rains are a reminder of challenges in life. Never ask for a lighter rain. Just pray for better umbrella. I just came across it while I was reading something on social media.
For this quote, I just added from church. The father was like, "For those who seek, always find. And so fight endlessly for what you want for the future."
Friends are like buttons on the lift. They either bring you down or take you up. I heard it while I was in secondary school and it stuck since then.
وَمَنْ يَتَّقِ اللَّهِ يَجْعَلْ لَهُ مَخْرَجًا. Whoever fears Allah will have solution to whatever problems. It is from the Holy Quran.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The Sudanese Transitional Government and the United Nations World Food Programme have signed a memorandum of understanding to fund a family support programme that will provide Sudanese families with direct cash transfers during the COVID-19 lockdown. Under the programme, the Sudanese government will provide direct cash transfers each month to support vulnerable families as part of efforts to mitigate the effects of the ongoing economic crisis. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
Sudanese Finance and Economic Planning Minister Ibrahim Al-Badawi signed a memorandum of understanding on behalf of Sudan with WFP Country Director Hamid Nuru signing on behalf of the World Food Programme. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok and the WFP Executive Director David Beasley witnessed the signing. The multi-ministerial programme led by the Finance Ministry is expected to start in June. It will be financed by the international donors and Sudan. Speaking in Arabic after this weekend signing ceremony, Al-Badawi said the program is one of the transitional government's greatest undertakings, adding it will provide direct cash transfer to about 80% of Sudanese families.
This program will play an important role in many fields, including restoring Sudan's development projects in the international community. It will help in resolving many issues and needs of the current transition. The agreement also specifically intends to provide support the families during COVID-19 lockdown period.
Sudan estimates up to 65% of the population live below the poverty line. Minister Al-Badawi says the already dire food security situation is likely to worsen with the closures of businesses during COVID-19 combined with the rapidly rising of prices.
The agreement shall also include provision of other services such as immunization for children, raising awareness among citizens against other illegal activities such as money laundering, fighting terrorism, and many other issues that will fit in this digital platform.
WFP Executive Director David Beasley describes the program as key to safeguarding people at risk of slipping into extreme poverty in Sudan. He says the WFP's partnership with donors, including the United States Agency for International Development, will enable WFP to provide critical assistance.
We continue to make strides forward to assure that the Sudanese people receive the support they need to make this the nation that everyone is expecting and hoping for, because the Prime Minister and his government are working together with donors around the world to build the systems to assure that we can transition the economy, and especially in very difficult times like now with COVID.
WFP will support Sudan in developing a cash transfer delivery and payment system and a feedback mechanism, including a call center to support recipients of the program. Besley says WFP and other aid agencies appreciate the government's efforts to improve the environment of the aid workers following the overthrow of former President Omar al-Bashir.
This program, the Help Families and Safety Net, is more critical now than we ever could have dreamed for. So the World Food Program, as we work with our partners, and especially the government of Sudan, the Prime Minister, his team have been remarkable to work with, but the donors that are standing around here that's going to help make this possible, we believe that it's a unique and extraordinary opportunity, a major step forward to moving Sudan to a brighter.
The Sudanese government and the WFP say the platform developed for the Sudan Family Support Program will allow efficient and accountable delivery of a broad range of services to the Sudanese people. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Doctors in Western Equatoria State say lack of personal protective equipment, or PPE, is making their work difficult during the COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. Kumba Victor, the medical doctor of Yambio Hospital, says the hospital received its last consignment of PPE in February this year. He says due to shortages of masks, medical workers are recycling non-reusable masks, which is against the World Health Organization guidelines. For VOA News, Siba Martin Murangi reports from Juba.
Dr. Kumba Victor, medical director at Yambio Civil Hospital, says equipment shortages are prompting medical workers to reuse non-reusable masks.
Other personal protective equipment, they are not adequate. In case there is an outbreak within the hospital, with the testing machine is not there, so some people, they may think that they have the cases when they develop the flu, or the way they develop a respiratory tract infection, they think they may be having the case. But there is a very small holding unit of bed capacity of 3, where when there is a respiratory tract infection case, we screen and then we admit the patient there.
Dr. Victor is appealing to the National Health Ministry to set up an isolation center in Maridi to be ready for a possible COVID-19 outbreak in Western Equatoria State. Dr. Mazin Severio, medical director for Maridi Civil Hospital, says workers at his facility also lack personal protective equipment.
We don't have enough masks to offer the patient and the doctors at the same time. Yeah, we have the gloves, we have masks, but not enough in amount. So you have to use your mask many times before you throw it, and which is not recommended by the WHO. Although we need them to support us with enough gloves, enough face mask. Also here in Maridi, we don't have enough oxygen concentrator for us to fight COVID-19. This is my message to the government. Let them provide us with the necessary items.
The Anika Women's Group in Yambio is making masks and selling them in the local community. Emilia Moses, the group's executive director, says her organization is selling masks to the local community at a reasonable price so everyone can be protected.
We have tailoring department who have decided to make this mask. We are selling it at a portable price. That's most special, the border guys who are always moving, and also the community. The mask we are putting at 250 only, the South Sudanese farm. We didn't put it that so that maybe we get profit, but to at least have to get something small so that it will enable us also to buy the materials to make more.
The National Task Force on COVID-19 says it is considering making the wearing of masks in public mandatory. For VOA News, I'm Seba Martin Rangi in Juba.
The Ethiopian government is calling for talks with Sudan to resolve issues related to border clashes that took place on May 28. The Sudanese army accused some Ethiopian-backed militia of crossing into Sudan, killing a Sudanese soldier and wounding many others, including civilians, during an attack along the border. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Speaking in Arabic, Sudanese Army spokesperson Brigadier General Amir Mohammed Al-Hassan described the attackers as Ethiopian militias who crossed into Al-Gadarif state in eastern Sudan to access an area of agricultural projects near Adbara River.
Ethiopian militias arrived on the east side of River Adbara opposite Birka Nuren. Their intention was to get water from the river. Our forces clashed with them at Birka and prevented them from getting water from the river. After that, a series of clashes ensued.
Hassan says the militias retreated, but then returned a short time later after receiving reinforcements from the Ethiopian army near the border.
Later in the day, Ethiopian infantry troops arrived on the eastern side of the river and clashed with our forces on the western side of the river. As a result, a Sudanese army officer in the rank of captain was killed and six others wounded, among them a first lieutenant. On the hill of Dad, we beefed up security in the area.
Hassan says the Ethiopian forces also killed Sudanese civilians, including a child.
Three civilians and a child were killed this time. Later in the day, the Ethiopian forces withdrew across the Ethiopian border, but they left behind snipers to guard the area.
Hassan says the Sudanese army will always defend its territory and liberate border areas from foreign incursions. The Sudanese Ministry of Foreign Affairs summoned the Ethiopian ambassador to Khartoum over the weekend to condemn the border clashes and demand an explanation from Ethiopia. The Minister of Foreign Affairs of Ethiopia released a statement yesterday expressing dismay over the incident and extended its deep sympathy and condolences to the families of the victims of both countries. The statement called for containing the situation and to avoid further tensions between the two countries. It said, such incidents are best addressed through diplomatic discussion based on the cordial relation and peaceful coexistence between the two countries. The border area in Sudan's Al-Gadarif state is recognized as Sudanese territory by both countries, but is also where Ethiopian farmers routinely cross into Sudan to work on agricultural projects. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with Lonely Boy with his song about the coronavirus.
COVID-19 virus, coronavirus, dangerous. BMC music.
Zone the beat.
Everybody get to know
coronavirus.
Everybody get to know
coronavirus.
Coronavirus. Ayan batal.
Oh, batal.
We have been listening to Lonely Boy with the song Coronavirus. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap. Practice social distancing and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Can
la 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 la